There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday. Live local talk over the hour. And reminder, the interviews, whether they come from the health world, they come from the economic and business world, like the small business stuff we've talked about, the political world, or we're going to add in the law enforcement world, the deal with COVID-19, specific tab on the front page of FMTalk1065.com. When you're there, click on the tab that says COVID-19 local news. And right there, you'll have the interviews. And the podcasts are available the old-fashioned way. You can get them at iTunes or Stitcher or any of the other podcast platforms that you subscribe on. Or you can just go to the tab that says podcast and get them a la carte. But I think the fancy people say we've curated the interviews there. I said we just gathered them up. They're in one place, COVID-19 local news tab. And also ask you this question in the 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. How has your business been affected by the state's coronavirus shutdowns? Right now, 7% of y'all say no effect. Good for you. 29% say minor effect. 64% of respondents in this poll say a major effect. And good news, though, the last choice here have had to close. Nobody's saying have had to close. So that's good. Hopefully we keep that number to a minimum. All right. And I mentioned the law enforcement angle of this, and I got the call last week talking about setting up this interview. I said, you got to be kidding me. Already? And yeah, probably already is true. And I have y'all pull those mics a little closer to you as well as in studio. It's a name you know who's been on the show with us many times, Public Safety Director with the City of Mobile, James Barber, and James Jewell, Special Agent in Charge of the FBI for the Mobile Division, both in studio. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here.
Thanks, Sean, for having us.
You mean they've already started? The fact that y'all are sitting here means there's already fraud and scamsters already starting surrounding this pandemic?
Yes, Sean, there definitely has been some reporting of scams from criminals. Criminals will take any opportunity to exploit victims.
It's only been a few weeks.
It doesn't take long. And the support bill for the COVID response we'll see a large increase in criminal activity related to the support bill that was passed last week. The message I want to give today, though, is if you are unsure about any email you receive, is you're not sure of the origin, please don't click on the origins. If you do know it's a fraudulent email, you can report that to the FBI's website, which is www.ic3.gov. Report any internet fraud to that number. If you feel more comfortable calling in, you can call 1-800-CALL-FBI, CALL-FBI. Report any type of fraudulent activity related to the COVID-19 response or any type of criminal activity via the internet, direct calls to your home, or email or text solicitations that you consider those to be fraudulent. It's very unfortunate that we have to deal with these type of issues during a national crisis, but that's the reality.
And I guess we've been used to it in the past, you know, talk about this after like a hurricane, right, that these things pop up, but I guess it's just another version of that.
That's right, and you know, we see criminals take advantage of any disaster, any crisis, in order to make money. And Jim, I guess it would be fair to say that the government would never solicit banking information over the telephone or by email. I mean, isn't that fair?
I would say that's accurate. And if you get an unsolicited email or contact from your banking institution, take measures to ensure that is a true and accurate contact from your banking institution. Get a callback number, call it back, look it up independently through your own records, through a public search. Don't enter email addresses directly into your internet web browser by manually. Do not just click links. Really take measures really from a cyber hygiene perspective to protect yourself and your family and your loved ones during this crisis period.
You know, Agent Joel, you're talking about things that day in and day out we've gotten used to, the scams that go on there. But like you both said, this is brand new, dealing with COVID-19. We're going to have there's checks coming in the form of at least the first one-time checks coming to every American under the 99,000. But then the questions about small business loans or unemployment. Now there's a bunch of new things coming in that we don't know that looks right. You get used to what things are supposed to look like and not look like in your email. But this is new.
It's new. You know, it's on the national news that these stimulus money is coming out.
Right.
And so it's easy for somebody to answer a phone call claiming that, you know, they're from the government and they need banking information to deposit your stimulus check. And so that's how they actually hook them into this.
So once again, y'all, here's the takeaway right here that I've gotten so far. Nobody is going to contact you from the federal government asking for your bank account number to deposit the check in.
That's correct.
Okay. That's like not a maybe. That's not a.
That's a, okay. no go.
So, y'all probably know this, but make sure your family members know this. You know, and maybe some older family members that aren't as cynical as the rest of us have become with things online. It's just there is no one that's going to call you from the federal government asking for your bank account number to deposit the money in.
That's correct.
Okay, that's I like. You know what? I like when things are cut and dry like that. You know, so you can in no case.
Well, you know, I guess with this particular one, the way they're able to take advantage of people is that nobody really knows how the government is actually going to give this money to you.
Right.
And so receiving that call or receiving that email to provide your banking information so that they can give you your stimulus money is really attractive to a lot of people, and they are not aware that it is fraud.
And people are, I mean, they're going to prey on the desperate nature. People who have been without work for a couple of weeks here figuring out how they're going to make ends meet, how they're going to pay bills. If somebody says, oh, well, if you do this, we'll get it to you faster. It could be there tomorrow.
That's right. That's absolutely correct.
What else are you watching out there for scam and fraud?
I think another scam that's recently on is purchasing your own private test kit for the COVID-19. So make sure if you want to get tested or you need to be tested, go through public health, your medical provider, your doctor. Do not try to purchase your own self-kit online or through some direct sale. Those are haven't seen that locally, but we know that is ongoing out there.
Now, these are, if somebody Googles it, they're going to see it? Or these emails coming in or text? How in what shape does it show up?
I think it's online. It's mostly online.
So if I go in here and I say, browser. Hey, man, I want to find a test kit, a COVID-19 at-home test kit.
Or people are being solicited through direct emails and boilerplate schemes, through phone calls, targeting the elderly population, likely, which is traditional boilerplate schemes, targeting those vulnerable in our society. So we have to be aware of those schemes and work hard. And we're doing that. You know, I touch bases with local law enforcement authorities within the state of Alabama on a routine basis. I think Jimmy Barber and I have spoken at least once every day last week. We touch bases with the federal prosecutors that can help in these situations. You know, you have two strong prosecutors in the Southern and Middle District, which is probably in your radio broadcast area, Richard Moore and Lewis Franklin, and they've dedicated resources to address any COVID-19 scams. And the FBI, likewise, we've dedicated individuals, both analytic resources and special agent resources in our office to just handle nothing but COVID-19 scams, which we anticipate they will be forthcoming.
But you know, Sean, it's not just test kits. I mean, it could be claiming that they've got medicines that will cure the COVID virus. It could be that they've got vaccines. And so they need to be aware that if it's not coming through a medical care facility or doctor, to be aware of that these are not legitimate places to buy medicine.
Right. So, I mean, there could be a lot of levels of this. There could be one where they're using this as a phishing scheme to get in and get into a bank account. But they could just be selling you snake oil, too, right? I mean, it could be as simple as that.
That's correct.
When y'all go after these fraudsters or these people that are trying to defraud folks on this, how many times can you get handles on? How many times are they here in the States? How many times do you run into a wall that it's some entity, you know, half a world away doing this?
Well, I think that's more often than not is the ability, the global economy and the global communication platforms allow individuals from other countries to target people here locally in Alabama. And in fact, many of this victims prey victim are targeted by individuals in other countries, some of the Asian countries, South American countries, African countries. It really runs the gamut, and that you can use the internet and global communication resources to target those locally in rural Alabama, and we see that quite often, unfortunately.
Agent Jewel, that's got to be frustrating, though. I mean, you pursue that, you're trying to do that, and then you run out of rope there, right? You can only go so far.
That is, it's challenging at times. Cybercrime is very challenging in that regard, particularly if the subjects or the bad actors are overseas. You have to work very diligently with Department of Justice resources, and you have to work with host nation authorities if we have those relationships in place. Now, the FBI has personnel in more than 100 countries stationed overseas to help facilitate some of those investigative activities, but it's still very difficult to achieve results. And once an individual, you know, it's tough if you lose your life savings. You know, what's the answer for you there? And it's not. It's a tough
situation. And you've had to take those calls.
Yes, we take them, unfortunately, too often.
Wow. Can you all hang out a second, run the news break, come back? We've got some more questions.
Sure.
All right.
Yes.
Run the news break, coming right back. Faster than the news can get out about a crisis, the criminals are already taking advantage of it out there, making you aware right here on Midday Mobile. If you've got questions, you can text those in as well at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday. Special guest in the studio, special agent in charge at the Mobile Division of the FBI, James Jewel. And, of course, a friend of the show for a long time, public safety director of the city of Mobile, James Barber. Can I ask y'all something here that has just been on my mind, been troubling me? And I think, and I want to get it from the federal perspective, too, but here at home, worry about the social distancing. We're trying to keep, you know, we're trying to keep coronavirus away from those that are at most at risk. At the same time, you know, people think, well, that's older people or underlying conditions, but there's cases come up where younger people get it and they don't die, but they get god awful sick. I think about the police department a whole bunch here. And yeah. It worries me, you know, one of the things that, what if it went rampant through, how do you deal with that?
You know, the police department, fire department, EMS are all part of the critical infrastructure of personnel. So, you know, where they're telling people, if you think you came in contact with COVID, stay at home and quarantine, we can't do that
right
with first responders. And so we've been very careful to make sure we keep PPE or personal protective equipment with all of our first responders. But you hear about the shortages, so that's mm-hmm. always a concern. But we have partnered off with Mobile Infirmary today to begin testing with first responders as well as other medical personnel so that we can be very quick to be able to identify anybody that may be infectious with COVID-19.
No, okay, because, I mean, y'all, the nature of what you do is sometimes, unfortunately, you have to have close personal contact with people that you're arresting or whatever. That's just the nature of it.
I mean, that is correct. And we started working on early on alternatives to custodial arrest on, you know, nonviolent misdemeanor cases.
Okay.
And so mainly you'll be issued a summons to come to court rather than a custodial arrest. And so that's something I'm talking to the sheriff of, how do we reduce the number of contacts we have with the public that are unnecessary.
You know? Right.
And so, but again, being able to protect, and I'll tell you, the fire department is relatively more unique than any of the other first responders in that they are confined together.
They live in a house, yeah.
That's right. And so one fireman that could bring that into a fire station could not only affect that shift, but could affect the three shifts that the other shifts that are coming.
Right. This is what I'm asking you. I'm following that. My worry when I started thinking about this, I said, just the frontline issue of dealing with folks and getting it. But if it gets into a department and spreads around, or like you said, if it gets in to the firehouse itself,
yeah.
I'm not trying to play, you know, you know, get people on high alert for no reason. But these are things that I think about, and I think a lot of other people do worry about that.
Yeah, right now we're not seeing a huge impact on our first responders, but we're being very, very diligent in the way we handle, how we handle cleaning of the fire stations, cleaning of our apparatus, even when we transport, you know, on our ambulances, is making sure that we decontaminate everything. And so, you know, the normal precautions that fire department has taken is like they would whether they're responding to tuberculosis or influenza. You know, you have to wear protective equipment. And so we're doing that, and we're also, like, ordering other disinfecting equipment that can help us do better at disinfecting ambulances and the fire stations.
What about on the federal level, Agent Jewell? What do y'all?
Well, Sean, we were, you know, probably 3 weeks ago, we quickly, when we knew the virus was hitting the major population centers on the West Coast and Seattle in particular, we immediately cut out all visitors to the federal offices, to the FBI spaces in particular. We put measures in to really handle as much of the walk-in complaints via telephone, not as much in person. We took measures that we don't have patrol activities day to day like the police. Your police are challenged much more so than your fire services are challenged locally. But we are in constant communication with our U.S. Attorney's Office, our U.S. Marshals at the courthouse. We have arrested a few individuals since the last 3 weeks, but we make sure we are in constant communication with the courthouse and how we're going to manage those. And we actually can do initial appearances via virtual conferencing now. And so I think Southern District of Alabama was the first court to have that capability to do that. So
I know that.
There was, so Marshall Sloak's team has been great here for us in Mobile. And so we have routine conversations if we need to effect an arrest, but we have a luxury that we can stay removed from the population centers that
unlike the fire and police
services on the street and the state level as well, the troopers and things like that. We just have an advantage there.
And that's my worry, I guess, is what I was talking about, is it getting into the FBI offices or wherever, something like that, where it could be, you know, but I'm thinking for fire and police, if one person has it, two people have it, then it's there, then get everybody sick at one time kind of thing.
So currently the FBI, no FBI employee or their close associates has been tested positive. No, we've not had it in our office to our knowledge, but we do have, in fact, we had a meeting this morning where we were talking about scenarios where we would maybe move to a virtual command system or put it in a mobile command post if we had to take portions of either the office here in Mobile out of commission or our satellite resident agency offices in Montgomery,
you can still operate.
Dothan, yes, we have. And we have sanitation procedures in place. We're constantly sanitizing the offices now, and if someone were to test positive, we have measures to address that at this point.
All right. There's a couple questions here. First of all, are tickets down due to the coronavirus? Can't say that I blame officers for letting small things slide.
You know, I haven't looked at ticket and citation numbers, but I would imagine that it probably is down. But I'll tell you something else that we've seen go down, believe it or not, is the crime rate has dropped. You know, when you compare the weeks of this year to the weeks of last year, we have seen a pretty significant drop in crime.
Now, it's not just that the coronavirus stories have pushed that off the front page, that we have actually seen the drop in crime. Why, you think more people would be more time on their hands, more time for mischief, but it's contrary, you're saying.
So far, that's what we've seen. There was a lot of concern that, you know, especially with the release of all the kids out of school, that there may be a lot of juvenile crime that spikes. But what we're seeing, and you probably see this when you go around, a lot of voluntary compliance with, you know, the social distancing. Mm-hmm. And so our last big hurdles are probably keeping our essential services. You know, we talked about first responders. We talked about medical staff and keeping them healthy on the front line. You know, but it's also the grocery store workers that we have to be worried about, because that is an essential service as well.
Cashiers, I mean, I think about people front line, you know, cashiers and people stocking shelves at a grocery store, putting their, you know, or people cashiers anywhere. I mean, I was at the parts house yesterday and had to lean forward the 6 feet, which at 5'10 is trouble for me, to try to put my card in the thing to respect the 6 feet. But that person, that cashier, there was nothing between me and that person every day. They could,
you know, I was out at Lowe's and they got pretty ingenious. They actually put a piece of plexiglass between the cashier and the customers, and so in an effort to keep their employees healthy.
So, I mean, everybody's doing what they can, and we're all, you know, critical parts of the economy. But I just think when public safety, I think law enforcement, we need, if anybody's getting sick, don't everybody get sick at the same time, okay? is what I don't want to hear.
We hope not, Sean. Thank you.
So once again, be aware, be looking for these scams, looking for the fraud, because with something new, here you comes know, the criminals.
One of the things we didn't really talk about, Sean, is price gouging from people that are selling.
We have to go to the hard break here in 1 minute, but we'll be back. Can you hold on? Because I want to talk about that.
Sure thing.
Question on price gouging. I can't believe we're in a conversation of price gouging toilet paper. You know, toilet paper shortages, and people are saying that they're selling toilet paper online for way. We've entered into a strange world. All right, we'll come back. More of your questions as well at 343-0106, 343-0106. Yeah, that's one of the price gouging items. Somebody sent me that that Facebook post or whatever where they were selling it on Facebook Marketplace for a highly increased price. Y'all, don't. I will urge you. The times will get better on toilet paper. Don't go pay it. And we'll talk about the law of this when we get back. Phone number is 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, in addition, if you'll check out Facebook.com and Twitter.com, the latest information we get on COVID-19 stories that are local here, we're passing them along on our social media platforms. So check them out there. And news is next.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. And phone number, text line 343-0106. Guest in studio, Public Safety Director, City of Mobile, James Barber, and Special Agent in Charge of the Mobile Division of the FBI, James Fuel. And talking about, scamsters, fraudsters already out, probably faster than most of us knew what we were talking about here when it came to coronavirus and COVID-19. The people on the scam side had figured this out, at least one of their methods of trying to make money. So once again, some of the takeaways here I've gotten, there's been a bunch, but number one, there's no reason, and we'll talk at the federal side here, there's nobody from the federal government is calling you for your bank account number to deposit money in from the federal government.
That's correct, Sean.
Okay. I keep asking you, but I want to make sure the most number of people, because when we get in an argument with, Uncle Jimmy, and he says, well, we'd say, we know on the fact that that's not true. And y'all mentioned price gouging as we went to the news break. So price gouging is something we talk about after a hurricane. This is something we talk about after a tornado or an earthquake.
It is, but with the shortage of various things, like you mentioned earlier, toilet paper, sanitizer, whenever you run into a shortage, you run into people that are willing to take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we've seen a lot of it, mainly because what a gouger usually does is take a hurricane, for example.
Okay.
So it really greatly impacts the counties along the coast. And so they'll come in from Ohio with mm-hmm. supplies that are really scarce on the coast and sell them for, outrageous amount of money. And we were talking earlier about Frederick. They were selling, like ice for $10 a bag, yep. or, $15 a bag. And people were desperate enough to pay it. But as Jim Jewell was bringing up, it's really difficult to prosecute cases when two people agree on a price.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a difficult hurdle to be able to prove it. But we certainly do want to know what people think. They are being gouged. In this instance, since it's a national shortage, the gougers are having difficulty.
Yeah, where is the gouger going to go find hand sanitizer and toilet paper to bring it in here? They're going to have trouble finding that product.
That's right. That's right.
But if you do see something, who do we report that to?
Well, you can certainly report it to local law enforcement if it's happening in the state. And certainly if it goes, across state lines, we can work with our federal counterparts if we think there is a federal nexus to it. But we would like to know that information, if nothing else, to put a stop to any kind of activity that could be gouging the public.
I want to ask a question here. Maybe y'all have an opinion on it or not. I don't know. But what was happening, it was happening right now, I think still was happening over the weekend in Florida, where I think Florida Highway Patrol was stopping traffic coming across the state line and saying, hey, if you're coming in Florida, you're not from here. Where are you going to quarantine for this period of time? Is that something that I don't know that I've ever remembered states checking traffic into their state? Obviously, if there's a manhunt or something on, but just what do y'all think about that? Do you think that stands? Do you think that's our new reality?
Well, from federal perspective, it's really a state call, and I think that may be our new reality for the time being, and maybe that's a lot of people will agree with the states taking those measures, but that's really their call at this point. I'm not sure. I don't think that would violate anybody's civil rights or civil due process.
That's
right. They're not
actually
stopping them. They're just gathering information in a public health and safety concern. So,
And you know, under a state of emergency, I would say that you know they're probably well within due process procedures. But the you know how effective is it? We don't know. But what we see is a lot of the public that's demanding more and more of government to do more and to help stop
sure.
the virus. And that's happening at the local level, the state level, and at the federal level to do more and more.
Yeah, in that vein, Sean, I would say, you know, civil rights, hate crimes, threats against certain populations because of the COVID-19 threat.
Right.
That's something that we've worked very seriously and take from a federal perspective. I know that the Attorney General has made mention of that. That would be something. I haven't seen it.
Okay, that's what I'm about to say.
But
seen
if
something?
We have that, we would be very aggressive in investigating those types of issues.
So, I mean, in a uncertain time, there's going to be all kind of things that could pop up for criminals of different sorts. I mean, that's why y'all are here today to talk about that. By the way, Lisa says two bottles of Lysol for $125 on Amazon right now. So, there's that would be, would that be interstate? Why, let me ask the interstate or wire fraud. What would that be if you had to go after gouging online?
Well,
has that become your job or whose job?
Well, it would become his, but you see, you're putting it out on Amazon, and here's the difficulty in this. If somebody's agreeing to that price and wants to pay it, so that's where the difficulty comes in. And so, Jim, I'll flip to you on whether or not that would actually constitute wire fraud.
Well, the technical violation potentially could be wire fraud, but we'd have to get a federal prosecutor to give their opinion on what does that meet the elements of a crime, since there is maybe someone that's agreeing to that price, and it's a shortage worldwide at this point. So I think it's not like they're moving product from one area to another, taking advantage of a vulnerable population in the Gulf Coast. Everybody is a vulnerable population at this point. But that's Richard Moore as a U.S. attorney. That's his call to give an opinion on that.
I'm just thinking, Lisa, all you have to do is, this is just the Hayseed Sean Sullivan method, say, hey, I heard today this specific case being discussed by law enforcement on a show in Mobile. That may get them to take it down.
You know, again, you know, a good point that Jim, we keep making here is that usually when we saw this, it was, you know, there's a product available somewhere else that's brought into a disaster area that people were taking advantage of. And this one's different because we are dealing with worldwide, you know, shortages of certain supplies. And so how do we really deal with that as far as the gouging statutes?
I don't know. There's so much of this is unknown. I've got a couple calls here, and if y'all want to grab those headphones, and Dalton, if you can come in, I'll get the beginning of the call here, and if we can get their headphones set up, because I want to go to Van's first. Uh-oh, did I lose Van? I think I still have Van on here. Van, are you there?
I am, Sean. Thank you, and thank you to you and your crew for always taking care of us folks here at this time of need. You guys do such a great job in bringing up information that's absolutely vital. I did have a question, though. I was reading on Forbes this morning. There was a link to an SBA website that asked a lot of specific information. It looked like a quick application app. It was a .gov website, but it did ask, as I was reviewing the information, about the owner's name, date of birth, social security number, the bank account, the routing number, made me very nervous. But because it's a .gov website, I didn't put any information in, but I was very suspicious of the fact that they would need all that information in an application format. Do you think that that might be something that could be problematic?
We've got the folks in here to respond to that. Gentlemen, what about Van's question here?
Well, Sean, I think that would potentially be very problematic. But how did he get the solicitation? I didn't understand.
Okay, Van, go ahead and just repeat, because we're getting headsets on everybody. So repeat what happened.
Sure. Absolutely. It was a link from the Forbes website.
Okay. So you linked from Forbes website. So you're at Forbes.com, right?
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Van, I would take measures to ensure that's actually, you told that Small Business Administration site is to go in and enter their site in directly and contact them directly for information. That sounds, it's, I can't say it's illegitimate, but it might be of concern.
It's suspect is raised an eyebrow.
I would, for sure. I would double check that with SBA directly.
Absolutely. So, okay. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, Van, I was just saying, because what Agent Jewell had said earlier is if you get any of this stuff, to go back and even if there's a link on something, what it tells you it is, then go and do it manually, right, and put it in yourself.
Yes.
Right. Correct. Okay. And there was a number on the bottom of the page. And like I said, I'm very suspect of anything like this, especially at this time. And just because it says .gov doesn't necessarily mean it's legitimate. Is that correct?
It's potentially a .gov account could be compromised as well. But that's more unusual. Usually you'll say .com or something like that. But I would definitely contact the SBA directly and enter their website in directly for an application.
Thank you very much for that information. Sean, thank you again for everything that you guys do for us.
Hey, Van, I appreciate it. Van, thanks for listening and being part of the show. And you're bringing up questions that, these are things you can't know everything that's going on, but there's one that might be, a phishing site, number one, to get your checks, this for one-time payment. But there are so many small business owners that are in such a tough place figuring out what they're going to do, make payroll next, make their rent next. They're also vulnerable.
Yeah, I think they all are. And, those desperate, when you get into desperate times is when they are most vulnerable, taken advantage of by criminals that are out there that certainly are looking for exactly that.
All right, let's go to Jim in Citronelle. Hey, Jim.
Hey, gentlemen. I appreciate all y'all do, too. Real quick there, Sean, I noticed that the trash is still down there at Water Street Government. They'll have it picked up. Just remind you. I got a question about the traveling to Florida. If you have permission to go, essential employee that is to go, and you plan on bringing somebody with you who might not be an employee with that same credential, who would you call in Florida to get the details on whether you can cross the state line with them? I guess would be my question.
Okay, so you're saying you have one of these forms here, these essential travel forms.
Right. I got to go to Florida, but I was going to bring AKA my spouse with me,
okay.
But she's not an employee. Would I call the government? Would I call Escambia County? Would I call the Sheriff's Department? Who would I make sure that I'm not doing something illegal by bringing my spouse with me?
Well, I don't think they've restricted any citizens from, all citizens from entering, but the Florida Highway Patrol would have the guidelines from the governor, and so I'm not really.
Uh-huh.
That would be who I would contact.
So FHP, call them.
Florida Highway Patrol.
Okay. Are we doing anything in the state of Alabama coming from Mississippi? I'm just curious on that same note. I'll hang up, listen, if we're monitoring who comes in and out. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
No, in Alabama, we've not set up any type of these security checkpoints.
Now, what about the situation where the governor calls for these businesses to be closed, right? And we go down the list. We've talked about it. Is that the job? Does that fall on MPD? I hate to ask this stuff, but this is, I think, fair question. So if it's whatever business, I'm not going to even name, it's just one of the sectors that's closed down, okay, and that place is open.
Yeah.
Then who goes and tells them they can't be open?
Well, it would fall on Mobile PD, and there's an attorney general opinion. When I say Mobile, it's also the sheriff's department, whatever.
Right, law enforcement in that area.
That's right. And so it makes it a misdemeanor to violate the state of emergency rules that are set out by the health officials of Alabama. And so when the governor makes that order, it does throw the enforcement onto law enforcement.
Y'all always get the fun end of it, don't you?
Well, I'll tell you, we were really, and I was telling you this early, what we've seen, though, has been a massive amount of just voluntary compliance.
People acting right?
That's right. There's been a few instances where some clubs try to stay open, and when law enforcement went and told them they had to follow the governor's orders, they voluntarily shut down. So we've not had to take enforcement action against anybody that I know of for violating any of the rules that the governor has put out. And as those become more stringent, I guess we'll have to wait and see how we handle that.
And you have the advanced surveillance system for that, which is called anybody else who's shut down in that sector. If I have a widget shop, if the governor said all widget shops are supposed to be shut down, if I've shut mine down and I see my competitor's got a widget shop and they're open,
Oh, I'm sure it'll call. I'm sure.
His phone's going to be ringing. All right, speaking of the phone ringing, once again, if people have any questions here, any issues that they're looking at, they think everything from seeing something that is fraudulent, like an email or a text, or something that they question here, like Van called in with. Once again, where are the resources? Where do people go?
Yes. Sean, if you have a concern about an email or some type of online solicitation, you can call 1-800-CALL-FBI, C-A-L-L-FBI.
Okay.
You can also report any kind of fraudulent contact email scheme through a website, www.ic3.gov. That's the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center. The Attorney General and the federal authorities are going to take these kinds of crimes very seriously, and we're going to be very aggressive in working those to a resolution and protect the people of Alabama.
All right. Thank you to you both for what you're doing. Thanks for coming in here and getting the word out.
All right. Thank you for
Thank you, Sean. I think you should be very proud of the folks in Alabama. It's been a very much of a team spirit and effort. We're all in this together, and it's been very nice to see the response from the public.
Folks are acting right. Just like Pastor Chris Bell said, you squeeze that sponge and quite often good things come out under pressure. That's a good thing. Thank you very much. Coming right back to wrap it up on this edition of Midday Mobile. Grab some calls at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 154 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Did you hear that? They say, I think that's just one of the predictions, but my Lord, 30% unemployment? I think the turnaround on this, I really do, is it's not the one-time checks. I think that's to get people from point A to point B. It's going to be what's done with business to give them the ability to keep people on the payrolls. I really do. I think that's going to be, and there's a lot of talk about the SBA side on this, but also even medium and large side businesses over 500 employees as well. This is going to be key to this because that is a scary number. Now, if it was just one agency saying that, I'd say, maybe it's not really going to happen. But there's a couple different predictions of that out there. Holy cow. All right. I saw this stay-at-home order because we were just talking about some of the Florida and what they're, FHP, stopping people at the state line, talking to them about where they're coming from, where they're going. So this story on thehill.com said Florida Governor Ron DeSantis today announced he is issuing a stay-at-home order for the southern portion of the state as the number of positive corona cases grows. So this order will apply to Broward, Miami-Dade, Palm Beach, and Monroe counties through the middle of May. So Miami Metro, Dade and Broward counties, or as they call it now, Miami-Dade County, Palm Beach County. So that's going north here. You got Dade, Broward, Palm Beach, and then to the southwest of that, Monroe County, which affects the Keys as well. The Keys are all in, the Keys are all in Monroe County through the middle of May. Unbelievable here. They said the safer at home order is the right move for Southeast Florida. DeSantis said at a press conference at Hard Rock Stadium, just north of Miami. He said, this is the time to do the right thing. Listen to all your local officials. We will do this through the middle of May and then see where we're at. Now, president saying yesterday through the end of April, a little extra here, already projecting through mid-May for Southeast Florida. I've got my baby sister lives there. And I'm going to talk to her tonight, see what that's like for her with her business, and maybe get her on the show sometime soon. They said there are more than 5,000 positive coronavirus cases in Florida, with the state's Department of Health reporting 523 new positive cases just yesterday. The four counties included in the stay-at-home order make up over 58% of the cases in the Sunshine State. But remember, the state of Florida want to keep the people from Louisiana out.
Although I will argue that the panhandle is a different story. Louisiana has been a story into its own. The growth we talked about all last week in number of new cases per capita. Now, per capita. Right? I mean, New York still with just volume, mass numbers, absolutely way ahead of every other state. But growing per capita, I think Louisiana was the fastest growing state in number of coronavirus cases last week. So we'll watch this. Dan's saying, if you can't leave the house for 6 weeks, how in the world are you going to survive? No one can store that much food. Yeah, Dan, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how extreme. I have to, like, all these things, I'm just learning, right? I'm just not used to knowing what what they call this thing, a safer at home order for South Florida. But stay at home. Yeah, how are folks going to go to the doctor, get groceries? There's probably exceptions there. I just have to read up on this afternoon. All right, and we'll rally again tomorrow morning at 6 for Mobile Mornings, along with Dalton and Dr. Bill and Kane. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. For Special Agent Jewel and Public Safety Director Barber, thank you to them this hour, and we'll see you tomorrow.